Morning, everyone. Today's daf and tzivos daf Yud Aleph. We're on Yud Amud Beis. So we're starting with the Mishnah today. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learning Zech Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. Let's start from the new Mishnah. Amounts of ksuva. So fundamentally, the ksuva is a settlement. The ksuva is it's not a settlement. In other words, it's an arrangement for a settlement, meaning the marriage will go well and extend long into their late years of life. But in the event that he dies or they get a divorce, so she's going to get a financial settlement. Yesterday was a big day. We discussed whether ksuva is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. The Gemara brought down a machlokas. We saw machlokas already in Tosfos in terms of how we follow the halacha. But either way, in other words, there's a ksuva. That's a masechta that we're learning. And the ksuva is meant as a means of giving her some sort of cash settlement upon death or divorce, upon the termination of the marriage. How much is it? So that we haven't discussed yet. Meaning we're already a week and a half into the Masechta, and we have not mentioned a number. Yesterday, very briefly, we mentioned numbers, but now we're going to mention numbers. Besula ksuva samasayim. So for a besula, for a woman who had no bia with a man previously, so her ksuva is going to be 200. Va'amana, and when it comes to an amana, a widow, so she gets 100. Again, we made this observation the other day. The grusha, obviously, is going to fall in line with the amana. A divorcee is going to be, and a widow are going to have the same halachic significance, the same halachic ksuva. Why the Mishnayos always mention almana and rarely mention grusha, not never, as we're going to see in just a moment, but it's always the contrast is between besul and almana. I know grusha is coming. But the contrast between besul and almana is usually the case, and rarely do we contrast the besul and the grusha. So in the context of this discussion, you will understand, we're all going to understand why almana becomes the centerpiece of the ksuva discussion being 100 as opposed to a grusha. In other words, wait and see. Besul, almana, grusha, vechalutzim, and eris, and ksuva, samasai. If I have a besula, in other words, she's physically a besula, she is a widow, she's a divorcee, she's a chalutza, and from Eris, since her ksuva is going to be 200, meaning that ksuva being 200 is all going to be contingent on her physical besula. So in other words, she may have had life experience, she may have been quote-unquote married, but if the marriage only was Eris and she didn't, the marriage wasn't consummated, so therefore the ksuva is going to be 200. V'yesh latanis besulim, and that of course also means that there's a potential for a claim of besulim, meaning if the husband and her, after the first night of marriage, he feels that she wasn't a besula for the reasons that we articulated in the last week and a half, so now he has the right to go to Beis Din and say to Beis Din, hey, I thought she was a besula, and turns out that she's not, and we go back to the beginning of the Masechta. So two things happen when she's a besula. Number one, she's entitled to 200. Number two is that she also obviously is, she has exposure to the possibility of Tainus Besulim. The ksuva is written at Nisuin. The collection, of course, takes place at the termination.
But it says from Rusin, right? So how could it be collected without the writing of the ketubah?
No. I'm sorry. The point of the Mishnah, let me try to be clear. The point of the Mishnah is that if she's undergone Erisin previously, and now she's getting married for her, it's the second time. So one can make the argument that if she's getting married for a second time, okay, the ksuva is not going to be 200. The ksuva should only be 100. The Mishnah's point is that no, even though for her this is a second marriage, but still the fact is that we know that the first marriage was not consummated, so therefore the ksuva is going to be 200. Okay.
No provision for inflation.
Well, again, the 100, 200, first and foremost, it's not talking about, I didn't make this point clear, it's not talking about a currency that you and I relate with, it's talking about Zuzim.
I understand. Okay,
so the amount, I don't know, you know, it's funny, I was thinking about this at the beginning of Masechta. We're going to be spending a lot of time talking about the 100 versus the 200. I don't know how much that translates into modern currency. In other words, how much is that? It clearly, from the Gemara, is a significant amount of money. That goes without saying. Right. In other words, as we learned already yesterday, and we saw a number of times, the whole purpose of the ksuva is to make the husband stop and think. Mm-hmm. You know, before dinner wasn't good, and that's it. I'm divorcing her. And so what it does is it tells the husband, why don't you take a moment? Why don't you take a breath? And you never know. Tomorrow night's dinner might be better. And it gives him pause to think that he shouldn't divorce his wife. So obviously, the money, it's got to be enough money, which is going to make him pause and think. So it's clearly a significant amount of money, but no, I don't know how much it translates to a modern currency.
Approximately an annual salary.
An annual salary, right? Yeah.
Can't there be an additional amount?
You can certainly add, but we're obviously, Alex, you're right. But we're talking right now about the base, the base structure of the ksuva. My amana, we start with the Gemara. We're on Yud Amud Beis, four wide lines down. My amana, Amirav Chana Bagdasa Amana Al Shei Mana. Oh, so the word almana is actually a derivative of the word mana, meaning contained in the word almana, widow, is an allusion to the idea that she's going to get a ksuva of 100. So amana mineris of Michael Amemar. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's not always true. And amana doesn't always get 100. And amana sometimes gets 200. In fact, just go back to the Mishnah we saw a minute ago, where the Mishnah says that if she's an amana mineris, so she's going to get 200. So I did the hakari le amana, hanami kari le amana. So the Gemara says, yeah, but okay, you're right. But the basic term amana, usually she gets 100. You're right. If she's an amana mineris, then we're going to call her an amana. But the truth of the matter is that she's going to get 200. Amana diksiva baraisa michael amemar. So the Gemara says, okay, what about the fact that amana is actually mentioned in the Torah? And the ksuva, like we saw yesterday, is a dindarabanan. So the Gemara says, "Michael Amemar, Datin Rabbanan Demetakin Leimana." So the Gemara says, "Good, the Torah forecasts into the future, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu wrote the Torah, so time for him is not an issue. It's not constrained by time. So therefore, he knows that there's going to be something called the Ksuva. He knows there's something. He knows that the Chachamim are Mesakin Amana, meaning it all works hand in hand. So in terms of the fact that the Torah is relating to something that's going to happen in the future, to that the Gemara says that doesn't bother us whatsoever. Umiksiv Krala." So the Gemara says, really? The Torah forecasts the future? The Gemara says, sure, in Dichsiv. So we have a third river, the four rivers that come out of Gan Eden. One of them is called the Chidekel, and it goes before Asher, Vatan Rav Yosef, Asher Zuslika. You're going to find this again and again. A Targum on the Torah is Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is Matargan. He's one of the translators of the Torah. So whenever you see very often when you see a translation of the Torah, you're going to see the word, you're going to see Rav Yosef involved. So, Betan Rav Yosef, Asher Zu Slika. Umi Havai. So, the Gemara says, Asher is a reference to Slika. Okay, don't ask me, I don't know. Asher is Assyria. That's generally speaking how we view it. But the Gemara's point over here is that it's referring to a country, a nationality that didn't even exist at the time. So, Atida. So, obviously, what the Torah is talking about is the future. Even though it's referring to a region that isn't yet there, and there's no nationality that's there yet, but nevertheless, it refers to the future. Same thing with the Amana. It refers to something in the future. Now the Gemara is going to go on to linguistics. We're going to see words. We're going to see what these words mean. Matar. Well, as far as rain is concerned, what does rain accomplish? Mashke, it irrigates. Marve, it grows. Mizabel fertilizes. Ma'adain, it makes everything lush. Umamshich, and it helps things continue. So that's all the benefits of rain. Amarava barav yishma, vitema rav yemar, bashamay maikra, talameha, ravena chaskidideha, bir vivim timogigena, simcha tevarech. Pasuk in Tehillim describing the rain and all the benefits of rain, like the Gemara just mentioned a moment ago. Amarava laza mizbeach. As far as the mizbeach is concerned, what does it do? Meziach. Meziach means like shift stones. We'll see what I mean. We'll see that. We'll explain that better in just a moment. Umazin, and it also provides parnasa. Mechavev, it makes us beloved to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Mechaper, and it also provides atonement. Hainu mechaper, hainu meziach. Gemara is bothered because meziach and mechaper are essentially the same thing. Mechaper means it atones for our sins. Meziach means it takes our sins and it dislodges them. Isn't that the same thing? So the Gemara says, Mezich Gzeres Mechaper Avonos. The Gemara says, not necessarily. The Mezich is going on the Gzeres. If there's any decree that's against the Jewish people, so the Mizbeach takes care of that. If there are any Avonos of the Jewish people, so the Mizbeach takes care of that as well. So now the Gemara says, the Gemara is going into a little, I don't know what to follow this under. It's not a gadata so much, it's more like definitions. So we went over matar, we went over mizbeach, and now we're going to go over tamarim, dates. What are the benefits of the dates? Mishachnan. So it warms up the body. Masba'an, it satiates. Mishashalan, it's great for the bowel movements. Me'ashran, it's like an energy bar, if you will. That's Rashi. Rashi machzikas kawach. It's like an energy bar. Velo mifan kan. And also, even though it's very sweet, you're not going to get addicted to the sweetness. In other words, you won't get date after date. You know, in the time of the Gemara, there was no sugar. I mean, it's been for most of human history, there hasn't been sugar. Sugar is a modern phenomena. So we all have developed a sweet tooth because of this wonderful thing called sugar, which I'm not sure if it's so wonderful, but back in the time of the Gemara, though, if you wanted something sweet, so fruit, that was the only option. So the Gemara says over here, don't worry about dates, meaning dates are not going to get you addicted to that sweet taste. So Amarav Achal Tamarim Al Yoram. The Gemara now describes how dates have an intoxicating effect. Okay, I can't attest to it, obviously. I don't fully understand the Gemara, but the Gemara assumes, and the Gemara says this a number of times, that dates do have an intoxicating effect. So the Gemara says that if you eat dates, you can't paskin. Meisr, the Gemara challenges with the Brisa Tamarim Shachar Zvarvis Yafos. If you eat dates in the morning or in the evening, so it's good. But mincha rose. But if you eat in the afternoon, it's no good. But tzaraim ain't kamosam. But if you eat a bitzaraim in the late afternoon, the Gemara says that is that's amazing. There's nothing like it. Oh, mevatlo shlosha dvarim, and also dates annul three things: machshav harav v'cholim ha'im v'tachtonios, evil thoughts, impure thoughts, and cholim ha'im. If you have any type of stomach ailment, so the dates will serve as some sort of diuretic, and tachtonios and something to do with your colon. Mi'amrinan delamalu elui ma'ulu l'fi shaita tirda. So the Gemara says there's no contradiction, meaning they're excellent, they're fantastic. At the time they're great, but at the same time, they mix you up a little bit. In other words, they're a little bit intoxicating. They have some sort of mentally debilitating effect, but the Gemara says, but in general, they're excellent. The Gemara says, you know, it's just like wine. Wine's also excellent, says the Gemara. But obviously, at the time that you drink it, it's gonna get you off tilt in terms of your thought process, but it's excellent. We also know the halach is that if you drink wine, you can't paskin halacha. Meaning, again, the benefits of wine are good, but at the same time, it also mixes you up a little bit. You can't paskin at the time. Or the Gemara says we can also approach this from a different angle. Before bread, after bread. Abai quotes his mother. You know, it's his foster mother. He quotes his foster mother all the time. If you eat your dates before bread, so it's it's like throwing wood in front of the fire. And if you eat your dates after your bread, so it's like a bolt in the door. It's like busting open the door. So in other words, there are times that it's good and sometimes it's bad. After bread, it's good. It strengthens the body. Rashi machzikos is a guf kabriach hasadach. Just like a bolt in the door. Okay, dasha. We're almost done with the linguistics over here in the Gemara. So this is now the fourth term that we are describing. So far we talked about rain, mizbeach, dates, and doors. Dasha Amarava Derech Sham. The word Dasha is actually a contraction of two words, Derech Sham. This sounds familiar, it should. The Gemara has done this before with some of these words. So the word Dasha actually is a contraction of Derech Sham. That's how you get in. Darga. What about we would call these steps, but the Gemara here is more, probably, it's closer to a ladder. So, Amarava Derech Gag, that's the way you get up to the roof. That's the word Darga, is a contraction of Derech Gag. Purya, that's the Aramaic word for bed. Amarav Papa, Shaparim Varavan Allah, that's where you do the mitzvah Pururavu. Amarav Nachem Bar Yitzchak, we're on the top of Yad Aleph, Amin Aleph. Af Anu Namar Islandis, Duchonis Delo Yalada. We're going to add one more to the list, and that is Islandis, we've discussed in Yavamos already at length. An Islandis is a woman who simply does not have the equipment to produce a child. So the word Islandis comes from the word Duchronis. It's a male ram. The male ram doesn't give birth. This woman, because of her physical condition, she cannot give birth. So that's the term Islandis from the word Ayal, a ram. Okay. We're on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, today's daf. We're starting with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is now going to be describing the following. Hagiyaretz Rashua V'Yashivcha. You have a woman who is either converted or held captive and ransomed, or she was a Shivcha. She was a Shivcha Kanaanite. She was purchased as a Shivcha. Excuse me. Shivcha Kananis, and in any one of these three circumstances, they basically move to Yiddishkeit. Sheniftu v'shenizgayu v'shenishtacharu, where they were ransomed, or they converted, or they were freed, they were emancipated. So in other words, in all these cases, they were in a state of, I was going to say not Jewish, but that's not... No, that doesn't describe all three. I'm looking for the term that describes all three of them. Anyway, they were in a position where they were in a compromised position. That's not the best way to say it, but okay. And then they came out. The point the Mishnah is about to make is that Pchusim Ibn Shal Shanim Yom Echad, as long as all this happened before they turned the age of three, Ksuvas HaMasan. So we know there's a Basula. The Gemara assumes again and again throughout Shas that a woman before the age of three, even if she had her Dam Basulam rupture, but it's going to grow back. After the age of three, it's not going to grow back. That's the assumption the Gemara makes, as the Mishnah is doing so right now. So if she is freed, emancipated, redeemed, converted before the age of three, so we know she's a Basulam, therefore Ksuvah is going to be 200. And V'yeshlam Tainas Basulam. And again, the Mishnah goes over the same point, which is that she also has exposure to a claim that she wasn't a Basulam. Okay, take a look at the Mishnah again. And just to make a subtle point in the Mishnah describes three girls: the Giyaros, the Shvuyah, and the Shivcha. So the order of the Mishnah is: first, we talk about the convert; then we talk about the woman who needs to be ransomed. She was held captive; she needs to be ransomed, and the Shivcha, and the girl is going to be emancipated. Then look at the next three words of the Mishnah: Sheniftu, Vishnizgayru, Vishnishtachru. You look at the three verbs; it's not a match. Meaning, if you wanted the three verbs to match the three girls, mm-hmm. So what should the Mishnah have said? The Mishnah should have said, Shenizgayru, and Sheniftu, and Shenishachru. So the Mishnah, it doesn't seem to be following any order. So the Rishonim pick up on this. Rashi doesn't say anything. But the Rishonim pick up on this, and the Rishonim say that, as one possible pshat of the Mishnah, that the Mishnah here is first, when describing the girls themselves, talking about status. Meaning, of these girls, who has the high status? The Giyaris, the convert. Convert has the high status. She's a girl. I understand we're talking about a young girl, so... But still, talking about somebody who made the decision to enter into the fold and become a Jew, so in terms of status, she has a high status. That's in terms of the description of the girls. But then with talking about the verbs, so from our perspective, what do we need to tend to first? What's our responsibility? Our first responsibility is Pejon Shvuyim. Pejon Shvuyim, if someone held captive, our responsibility is to make sure that we ransom that person. It's a huge mitzvah, Pidgin Shvuyim. So that's why the Mishnah, in terms of the verb, describes that first. Yeah?
A girl,
that's going to be today's discussion, today's daf. You're right on task. Okay, that's a possible reason why the Mishnah it does not align in terms of the description of the three girls and the verbs that are used right afterwards. Okay, starting off with the Gemara now, this is a very big daf and a very big discussion in terms of children converting. Our Mishnah is assuming, without any reservation, without any hesitation, that you can have a girl under the age of three convert. So how is she converting? Amar Rav Huna, Ger Katan Matbil Nasal Das Beis Din. So Rav Huna describes that a Ger Katan, that if you have a minor, so you can... put him in the mikvah, tov in the mikvah, das beis din, and do so using the das of beis din. Beis din will provide that das that's necessary. It's a very interesting Rashi. You take a look at the first Rashi on the Gemara. It's four lines down from the top. Rashi writes, im ein la'av. So Rashi describes, what minor are we talking about? Who's coming? So Rashi describes that there's no father. V'imo heviyoso lizgayer. Mom brought this child in to convert. So it's interesting. From the Gemara itself, you literally don't know. Is there a mother? Is there a father? Or is the child just simply coming in on his or her own? It's unclear. Rashi is describing over here that there's a mother. There's no father, but there is a mother. Why does Rashi say that? So we could speculate, meaning not totally sure, but it's brought down in the halacha that if there is no quote-unquote, if there's no petition, meaning if it's totally unsolicited, we're not going to take children and we're not going to convert. Meaning, and some poskim go even to the extent of saying that's not even a good conversion. Okay, but in other words, the basic idea is that conversion needs some form of a sponsor, if you will. A sponsor is not the best word, but you understand. In other words, you need somebody there who is, you know, who's encouraging it. It cannot be that the child's coming on his or her own and we're really going to be we're going to be paying any attention to this, to this such a conversion. We're not a proselytizing nation, and so you need somebody to go along. So that could be an explanation of Rashi, why Rashi describes how there is still is a mother in this Gemara. Amar Rav Huna, so let's go back to the Gemara. Let's reread. Amar Rav Huna ger kadno at bilo so das beizdin. So beizdin is going to be providing the das. My kamash malan. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? Says the Gemara, it's not a chiddush. Which to me is so interesting. It's not a chiddush. I think it's a huge chiddush. But the Gemara says it's not. The Gemara says because we have a general principle in halacha, which is that if you're creating a zechus for somebody, so zachla adam shalab b'farnav. So we know that you can create a zechus for somebody even without their knowledge. So Tanina, the Gemara quotes a brisa, it's a mishnah. Zachla adam shalab b'farnav, ein chavan adam shalab b'farnav. So you can create a zechus for somebody even without their knowledge, but you cannot create a chov. You cannot create an obligation for somebody unless you obviously have his consent. But without his consent, you can't create a chov for somebody. So Mao de Tamas, and now the Gemara expresses what is the chiddush in the conversion. So the Gemara says, yeah, when it comes to Novi Kochavim, so he's very happy, meaning he doesn't have to keep kashrus, doesn't have to keep Shabbos, meaning it's a tremendous chos to be a Jew, but at the same time, it also demands responsibility. And maybe he's not ready for that responsibility. And from that standpoint, it's a chova. So Gemara says, I kamalan, David v'ada behefkere nichale. We have a general principle that in Eved, behefkere, he likes his freedom. He likes his free life. And he doesn't like to be saddled with all these rules and restrictions and regulations. So kamash malan, da'animili gadol, the tam disur. So the Gemara goes on to explain. I'll tell you why over here that's not true. Because when it comes to an adult who has experienced and tasted that kind of free life, so the Gemara says, you're right. So for him, you can't not assume without his consent that he's interested in becoming a Jew. But when it comes to a katan, so it serves as his chos, it's absolutely going to be to his benefit to become a Jew in, and so therefore it falls under the category of Zachal Adam Shalab Afanav. It's a simple example of Zachal Adam Shalab Afanav, meaning you can create a marriage for somebody without his knowledge, without his consent. So it happens to all of us every single Shabbos. So we all know, we went through Erevin. So we know that in order for us to be able to carry within a circumscribed area, in other words, you have the Tzuras of Pesach all around, and so now great, so we can carry? No, not yet. In order for us to carry, so we need to contribute bread to the communal Erev. So everyone in this room, today's Erev Shabbos, so everyone in this room is going to go home and bake a bread and contribute to the communal Erev, right? Nobody in this room has done that. But that's an obligation. You can't carry an Erev unless every Jew within the circumscribed area does it. So unbeknownst to us, so somebody did that for us. The rabbi of our community and the rabbanim of our community. So they got matzah and they handed it to somebody, and that somebody said, I'm accepting this on behalf of every Jew that's living within the community. And there's a prime example of Zachla Adam Shalab Afanav. We don't even know about it. And it's a zchus. It allows us to carry on Shabbos. So that's just a simple example of Zachla Adam Shalab Afanav. Gemara says same thing over here for the child. Zachla Adam Shalab Afanav.
But the thing is that this child now has certain obligations that he doesn't even know about.
Good.
You're carrying in a chaser or whatever because of that, it's something that you're kind of getting benefit, but there's no responsibility on you. But the child all of a sudden becomes Jew with all the mitzvot, and they don't even know about it. How is that?
He's going to be told about it. Again, we'll go back to that Rashi. Rashi describes that there's somebody in his life. He's not. We're not just picking up a child off the street and saying, okay, you're Jewish, and that's not the way it's working. There's somebody in his life that's gonna try to guide him or steer him. There's a very basic question that Tosis over here deals with, and that's the following. We are describing now how the child is going to become converted because of the principle of Zechiah. In other words, Zachal Adam Shalab Afanav. We're going to create a schus for somebody. Okay. How does this work? Meaning, when we have this principle of Zachal Adam Shalab Afanav, Zechiah. So how does that work? How does that principle work? Generally speaking, this is not universally accepted, but a number of Rishonim say that Zechiah works mitam shlichus, meaning that basically what's happening is that there's an agency being created. Meaning when the rabbi gives the bread to somebody to accept it on behalf of everyone else, so what am I doing? He's my shliach. Now I know I didn't appoint him as my shliach. I don't even know that exists. But nevertheless, what we're doing over here is that it's good for me, and because it's good for me, so therefore, by default, it's going to become my shliach. What's the problem? No, it's too close. Okay. What's the problem? The problem is very simple. A katan does not have the power to appoint somebody a shliach. And if the katan doesn't have the power to appoint somebody a shliach, so that's great, it's a zechus. But mechanically, meaning from a halachic standpoint, how is this working? How is this child converting based on zachar l'adam shel b'fanav? If zachar is a function of shlichus, and a child simply does not have the collective power to make a shliach.
What about a non-Jew getting a shliach? Can a non-Jew get a shliach?
That's another. That's an excellent question. Okay, so let me take it one. Wait, hold on a second. Let me just take it one step at a time. I asked the question. Let's go through some of the answers. The answer's right here on the page. You don't have to. I don't need to be curious, and then they'll come back. I'll take questions. So Madbilan saw das basim mishum dischusu. Take a look at the top Tosas over here. Vitema Tosas says, I don't understand. Daha zechia havi mitam shlichus. Zechia operates through shlichus. And the kevin dischusu lo anam sahade david leshlich. The mocha ber kam de bar mitzia. So wait till we get to the beginning of bar mitzia. We're going to see over there that what zechia basically does is it serves as an assumption that this is good for me? Good. I'm going to make it my shliach. Again, I didn't know that, but that's what Zechia does. Zechia assumes that he's going to serve as my shliach. Gab echatz mishum yadis rabbi v'lo gar mishlichus v'im kein heich zach l'katan v'halo ein shlichus l'katan kada amrin abezu neshach. So Tosus is bothered by a very simple question. The katan cannot appoint a shliach. So how is he converting? It's a great question. Well, I mean, this is right. That goes back to Ben's question, meaning he's a goy. How can?
But shliach, if he's not there to get the brit, how could he?
No, but the shliach usually there's an appointment, but the idea of zechia is that because it's good for me, so there's going to be an assumption that I'm going to appoint him as my shliach, even if that's true. A katan cannot appoint a shliach. So Tosfos, it's a long Tosfos. I'm going to cover just the highlights of Tosfos. So Tosfos gives a couple of suggestions in terms of how this is going to work. Skip down a little bit. Venir Lari. So the one approach of Tosfos is that it is a zechia, although it's a zechia midrabanan. Meaning it operates on a derabanan level. So that means then that on a Torah level, it's not shlichus. That means on a Torah level, it's not gerus. So Tosus acknowledges and Tosus says, ha'asi lechlal shlichus. Okay, so you're right. In the current state, he's not a full-fledged convert, but you know, TBD, to be determined, he's on his way to becoming. Okay, so answer number one of Tosfos is that this conversion operates on a derabbanan level. Okay, that's, again, the question is so strong that the answers, you know, the answers obviously are going to be strong as well. So answer number one is that it operates only on derabbanan. Inami kevin debahach zechia anasi yisrael havalei kisrael gamor le'inyan zechia. V'intamar hechi avager mederabbanan v'sharin le'bebas yisrael v'kidusha kidushin. So the Gemara says now, Think about what we're saying. We're saying that if the conversion is only midrabbanan, and then he can marry. Another, how can that be? So Tosu says, well, you're right. It's hard to imagine that he's a ger midrabbanan, especially if we're going to be having a discussion and allowance of him marrying a Jew. Ger midrabbanan being able to allow a Jew. So Tosu then falls back on a Gemara that we saw together in Yavamos, that there are occasions where the Chachamim can have that ability to literally to uproot something in the Torah, to basically tinker a little bit with some of the rules and regulations. We saw this most notably in Yavamos in the 15th parak, when we talked about how one witness can now allow a woman to remarry. One witness, you normally need two. So if you look at Tosfos over there, Tosfos says Yesh Koach Biachacham Lakor Davar Min HaTorah. If we could fast forward to the end of Tosfos over here, Tosfos gives another suggestion in terms of how this how this conversion works. So again, the question on the table, it's really the big question of the day. How does the conversion work for a katan? The Gemara says it's zechia, but we know, again, Tosis is assuming that zechia works through shlichus, a katan can't appoint a shlich. How does it work? So approach number one of Tosos is either it's midrabanan. Approach number two of Tosos is yesh koch b'achacham lakor davim in a Torah. And the third approach, if you take a look at the very end of Tosfos, he writes, avahacha, I'm going to the last line of Tosfos, schus gamer hulo yesh lo shlichas. Tosos says, it depends. If we're talking about a regular zechus, now I don't exactly know what that means. I'm just going to just try to fit into the language of Tosfos. If we're talking about a regular zechus, so you need to be an adult in order to create a zechiyah. But if we're talking about what Tosfos describes as a zechus gamur, it's an absolute zechus, which if we just pause for a moment and reflect, what Tosfos is essentially saying, being a Jew is not a half a zechus, it's not mostly good. Tosfos describes being a Jew as being zechus gamur. Okay, good. It's worthy of reflection. So Tosfos says that it's a zechus gamur. So if it's zechus gamur, if it's an absolute zechus, so then you can even extend zechiyah even to a katan. That's Tosfos's final approach. And if you want more on this topic, you could. I spoke about it on another occasion, but I have notes on this topic. If you want even more discussion on this topic, okay. The big question of the day. Yeah, go ahead. Do me a favor. Let's not discuss cases.
You say that the way they said she's Jewish, but you have to tell as time that she has enough knowledge. You got to tell her, and when she becomes 12.
The Gemara is going to get to that. We haven't gotten there yet. Okay.
The first part I don't understand. You say if child 3, you don't. If she wants to convert, is it that our real mother, was the mother a convert as well?
Unclear. That's a great question. Okay. It's unclear. Great question. Unclear from Rashi. Rashi. All I have to work with is three words of Rashi. Rashi says, "Imo heviyasolis gayer." Mom brought him to convert. It's not. It's totally unclear from Rashi. Right. She's converting. She's not converting. I don't know. Intuitively, I would say that there has to be somebody in together with her, with the child. Otherwise, it's kind of hard to. It'd be hard to maintain. But okay, I don't know.
Why would you have to convert?
Huh?
Mom's Jewish.
No, mom is not. She's not. She, you're correct, right? Reminds me of the story of the guy comes to shul. He says, I'd love to get going. Okay. Everyone knows the punchline. Okay, good. So they're not Jewish. What David was asking, which I don't know the answer to, is in this scenario that we're describing, where the child's coming in and mom's bringing in the child, is mom also converting? Again, I don't know. It's unclear. The Gemara says nothing, and Rashi only gives me three words to work with, so I don't know. Okay. Amar of Yosef. Let's go back to the Gemara. Let's continue. So, sorry, I skipped. I see that I skipped. Okay, good. Okay, in the Gemara, we're about 12 lines from the top of the Amud. The Gemara says, look, let's take a look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah describes a child converting. So, my love, that bilino adas based in. Now, who's doing the conversion? So the Mishnah doesn't say. The Gemara assumes it's talking about Beis Din. The Gemara says, but that's not necessarily true. Lo, ach, b'maiskinan, b'geshin is gaya banu v'nosav imo. Gemara says, no, we're talking about where the father's coming to convert and he's bringing his children with him. That's what our Mishnah is describing. So our Mishnah is not an absolute raya that a child can convert using the das of Beis Din. D'nichlu b'may David avuhun. And if dad's converting, so the kids are going to convert as well. But from our Mishnah, you cannot necessarily conclude that a child can convert using the das of Beis Din. Amar Rav Yosef, higdilu yicholin limchos. Now, this child who went through a conversion, and obviously at the time of the conversion, the child had no das themselves. So they had a sponsored das, right? An adult provided das for them. Either the case that the Gemara just described is the father provided the das, or what the Gemara started off with, the Rav Huna said, Basin's providing a das, but you have a sponsored das. Someone sponsoring their das. But the child eventually is going to get old enough and mature enough and cognitively aware, and the child's going to know that. What happened? So Rav Yosef says higdilu, when the child grows up, yichol and limchos. So the child has an ability to protest, and protest meaning can renounce and say, no, look, I appreciate it. It was a nice idea. It was a nice thought. But now that I'm old enough, and now that I'm mature enough, so now I'm not interested. Okay, Gemara, let's go on to the Gemara. Eish ve'abai, the Gemara challenges, Agir ve'eshvoi ve'shev ch'shniv sh'niftu. Fishin izgai v'shin sh'achu p'chutzim b'bino sh'losham yom echad. K'suv asam ha'asayim. All we just did is reiterate our Mishnah. And our Mishnah says that when she gets married, this convert who converted below the age of 3, so her ksuva is going to be 200. Visa kadachi higdil yichol limchos. Now think about this. You mean to tell me that at any point in her adult life she can renounce her conversion? So yavin la ksuvasa dazva achla begiusa. So the Gemara says, now what? Now you're going to give her the 200 zuz, and then she's going to renounce her Yiddishkeit? And that's the Gemara says, I can't imagine. So the Gemara says, l'chi gadla. So the Gemara says, okay, you'll give it to her when she becomes, you give her the ksuva payment when she gets older. So the Gemara says, l'chi gadla nami memchaya. So the Gemara says, can't she renounce it later in life? V'nafka, and then just simply leave the fold? So the Gemara says, no. Kevin she higdila sha'achas v'lo michasa shuv ina yichol limchos. So the Gemara says she has a very small window of opportunity of renouncing her conversion. Once she becomes a gadol, in her case a gadola, so it's at that point when she crosses the threshold from being a katana to being a gadola, so she has now at that opportunity. Now,
is that 12 and a half?
I assume 12. In other words, the 12 and a half stage, that's Nara, that has different halachic ramifications.
Okay.
She's turning Nara to Bogeris. But when she turns 12 years of age, she's now gadola. In other words, she's chayv in mitzvos. So at that point in time, she now, at that threshold, when she crosses that threshold, then and only then she has the ability to be mocha, to renounce. But after that point in time, she no longer has the ability to renounce. Mace of Rava. Rava essentially is going to ask the very same question, just instead of quoting our Mishnah here in the first parak, we're going to quote a Mishnah in the third parak. Mace of Rava. Elonau sheishlam kanasa bala mamzeres vala nesim vala akusis v'yala giyoros v'ala shvoy v'ala shivcha shenifta v'shenishkaru v'shenishtachu p'chusim m'bino sholoshan v'yam echad yeishlam kanas. The Mishnah in the beginning of the third parak is going to tell us that there are certain women who are going to get a knas because we assume that they had a besulim, dam besulim, and therefore through the onus, through the violation that occurred, so her besulim was ruptured, and therefore the perpetrator is going to have to pay her a knas. And one of those is a woman who converted before she was the age of 3. Now, the Gemara says, now you mean to tell me that she can renounce her conversion at any point in the future, and you're going to give her all that money, and all she's going to do now is just leave the fold? The Gemara says, okay, you're going to only pay her when she gets older. The Gemara says, okay, but when she gets older, she's going to renounce. The Gemara says, I'm sorry, v'naf kan, she's going to leave. Again, the Gemara says, no. Same basic answer. No. She can only renounce her conversion only when she crosses the threshold from a katana to a gadola. But after she's a gadola, she can no longer renounce. Abai lo amar karava. Now, Abai and Arava basically went through the same Q&A. It's just that Abaye used our Mishnah as a platform of asking the question, and Rava used the Mishnah in the third parak. So the Gemara now is just going to give us a better understanding of why each one chose the Mishnah they chose to ask the question. The reason why, from Abaye's standpoint, the Mishnah in the third parak didn't bother him at all is because there we're talking about rape. There we don't want the perpetrator to get away with it. And so therefore we're talking about Kanas. And even if she could renounce, which she can't, but even if she could, that's not the point. The focus is on the fact that he committed a crime. He has to pay his Kanas, he has to pay his penalty, period, done. Regardless of what happens to her and she renounced, she doesn't renounce, we don't want the perpetrator to benefit. But Rav lo amar kabai ksuva hainu tamer shelo tei kala beinav lo tzia. And as far as Rav was concerned, our Mishnah didn't bother him. Why? Because our Mishnah is talking about ksuva. You write a ksuva for your wife, so lo tei kala beinav lo tzia. Makes you pause and think twice before divorcing her. So even if it's true that she could renounce, which again, it's not. But even if it's true, but to keep the marriage intact, you need a ksuva. So what difference does it make? What's going to happen in the future and she'll renounce her conversion? Even if it's true, which it's not. But still, for the term of the marriage, the ksuva is absolutely necessary. So that's why Rava wasn't bothered by a Mishnah. Okay. Hagadol shabal ketan v'kan shabal gadol amukah says ksuvas amasayim divrei Rabbi Meir. Okay. Well, the Mishnah now is going to go over other scenarios where we're going to be discussing exactly how much the ksuva is going to be. Again, the beginning of this morning, we learned that for a besula, her ksuva is 200. For a non-besula, or to be more accurate, what we've seen so far this morning, an almana, the ksuva is 100. So now the Mishnah here is going to be discussing scenarios where you can, we're somewhere in the middle between a besula and almana. I know that sounds strange, but you'll see all the examples that we're going to give, and you'll see exactly why some of these are debatable. Let's say you have an adult male having relations with a katana, a minor, the kanchabal gadola, or the male is a minor having relations with a gadola. She's an adult. Umukas eitz, or the case of mukareitz. Mukareitz means that she suffered an injury. In other words, horseback riding, or she's suffering some sort of injury where she lost her dam basulim, but not because of any penetration of a man, just simply because of an accident that occurred. Ksuvasa masayim divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that in all these cases, the ksuva is going to be 200. Now, in most of these cases, I'm sorry, in the case of mukareitz, intuitively we understand. I mean, the Gemara is going to make this point, but let's just say it out loud right now. Mukareitz, there was no man involved. In other words, there was an accident. There was a simple accident of life, and she's gonna lose her 200 zuz ksuva just simply because she had an accident in life. Her mayor says no, that's not that does not devalue her, so to say. The first case of the Mishnah, Gadol Shabal Ketana. So if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi writes, what are we talking about? What's the Mishnah talking about? Pchus mibal shalosh shanim. The Mishnah is talking about a case where she was violated below the age of 3. So she's not going to lose her basula. Similarly, take a look at the next Rashi. The next case of the Mishnah, what's that describing? A katan. Rashi says, Pachus mi ben teisha. You remember this from Yevamos? We said that when it comes to a boy, his obviously he becomes an adult at 13. But we're not talking about adulthood. We're talking about physical maturity so that his bia is regarded as a bia. And for that, the cutoff is 9 years of age. Above 9 years of age, his bia is considered a bia. Below 9 years of age, his bia is not considered a bia. So, the Mishnah over here, when describing the katan having relations with the gadol, it's talking about where he's below the age of 9, and therefore his bia is not going to be regarded as a bia. Sorry. In all three of these cases, the Reb Meir says she's still going to get a ksuva of 200. The Chacham Amomri Mukaseitz ksuva samana, and the Chacham Imser, no, when it got, regarding the Mukaseitz, she lost her dam besulim, therefore, her ksuva is only going to be 100, not 200. Besula amana grusha vechalutza min anisun ksuva samana. If you have a woman who is still a besula, but she was widowed, divorced, or chalutza from nisuin, meaning she went through the second stage of marriage, even though that marriage was not consummated, but still, the fact that she went through the second stage of marriage now reduces her ksuva for her next marriage to be down to 100. The ain lahem, just one moment, the ain lahem tainas besulim, the next part of the Mishnah, top of the next Amud, and there is no tainas besulim. You cannot make a claim of besulim, because there is no longer a chazaka. There's no longer a presumption. Even if she says that there was no consummation of the marriage, meaning she went through both stages of marriage. She went through Eris and she went through Nisuin. So because she went through both, so therefore there is not necessarily a chazaka, an assumption, a presumption of her being a basula, and therefore her ksuva is 100 and there is no tainus basulim. The previous mission, she says she gets 200 only if she's divorced from Arison. When she's divorced from Arison, so then it's 200. Here, our mission is describing where she's divorced from Nisuin. Hagiyores vehashvuya vehashivcha sheniftu v'shenisgar v'shenishachru yiserosal b'no shalosham yamechak zivasaman ve'elam tanis besulim. If you have a woman who is converted or ransomed or emancipated above the age of 3, the default assumption is that she experienced bia, and because she was above the age of 3, so therefore her besulim are not going to be choseres, and so therefore her ksuva is going to be 100. So Rav Yehuda quotes in the name of Rav that when a katan, and again in our discussion in this, in the context of this Gemara, a katan is referred to as someone below the age of 9 who has relations with a gedola, so makes her a mukat eitz. She now has the same status as a woman who has suffered an injury and lost a basula. And this was reported to Shmuel. Shmuel says, no, I don't agree. There is no mukadates when it comes to basa, meaning mukadates, the term literally means that she had an injury with a tree. Okay, but in other words, it has to be an object that can actually rupture her basulin. But when you're talking about a boy that's below the age of 9, so that boy below the age of 9 has no ability to rupture her basulin. Now, instead of saying this springboarding off of Mishnah, the Gemara says another way to present this is that they're just arguing over the issue directly. Katan abal gedola. If a katan has relations with a gedola, Rav Amar sa mukadates. So Rav's of the opinion that it renders her a mukadates, means it gives her the same status as a mukadates. Shmuel Amar a mukadates babasar, and Shmuel disagrees. No, it's not. Does not render a mukadates. Meza Rav Oshia. So Rav Oshia is bothered because of our Mishnah. Let's go back to our Mishnah. Let's review what we learned together in the Mishnah. Gadol shabal katan v'katan shabal gedola mukadates. Rabbi Meir says that in these three cases, we assume that she has not lost her dam b'stulma, and therefore ksuva for her marriage is going to be 200. And the Chachamim say, in which case? In the case of mukareitz, her ksuva goes down to 100. So, what does it sound like from the Mishnah? A simple reading of the Mishnah is that the Chachamim is only arguing over the case of mukareitz, but the Chachamim are not arguing over any of the previous cases. One of the previous cases is a katan having relations with a gedola. And it sounds like everyone's in agreement that in that case over there, the ksuva is going to be 200. So Amar Rav Achi Kamar. So Rav says, no, we can learn the Mishnah like this. This is going to be our pshat in the Mishnah. Gadol abal katana v'lo klom. If a gadol has relations with a katana, again, katana in the context of our Mishnah is a girl below the age of 3, her basilim are going to grow back. Okay, it doesn't affect her whatsoever. The pachos mikan kenosin etzba ba'ayin. The Gemara gives an analogy. It's like putting a finger in your eye, where it's not too far into the eye, but in other words, the eye will recover. V'katan haba gedola asa mukareitz. And then in this pshat in the Mishnah, now we're going to pause between the first case of a gadol abal katana and the next case of the Mishnah of katan haba gedola. Kadna ba'al gedola asa mukar eitz. It's tantamount to mukar eitz, or mukar eitz kufa plukta, the Rabbi Rabbanan. And as far as mukar eitz is concerned, that's the machlokes between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Good. So if you have this pshat in the Mishnah, so then you do have a defense that a katan, a boy under the age of 9, is going to be treated like her being injured in an injury, and that's the machlokes between Rabbi and the Chachamim.
What was the Shmuel?
No, Shmuel's position doesn't need defense. Meaning, Shmuel's position is
Shmuel's in with Rabbi Meir right now.
Really? No, then Shmuel. No,
Shmuel said that mukadates cannot be through human flesh. Right, and we are saying that the rabbi said it.
Shmuel's easy to defend because Shmuel, the simple pshat in the Mishnah is that the only point of contention between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is only regarding mukadates, but not the case of katan haba gedola. The Gemara has to fight to find a pshat for Rav, because Rav is telling you that no, the case of katan haba gedola is tantamount to mukadates. So that's what the Gemara just did. The Gemara just said a slightly modified pshat in the Mishnah in order to defend Rav. Amar Rami Bar Chama Machlokas Keshiker Badir Amer Medam LeLebegers Rabbanu Medam LeLeBeula Avalo Hiker Badiver Akol Lo Klom. The Gemara now suggests as follows. Now, the case of mukadates, the Mishnah brought down a machlokas whether or not uksuva is 200 or 100. The simple question, which we could have asked back in the Mishnah, but we didn't, let's ask it right now, is, did he know? Did the husband know or did the husband not know? What kind of conversation did they have before? Again, it's obviously an emotional conversation, but it's a very quick one. She could have just simply disclosed. Look, I'm just, you know, just so there are no surprises, she can tell him that I had an accident. I no longer have dam besulim. Good. Is the Mishnah talking about where he knew, or is the Mishnah talking about where he did not know? So, Rami Bar Chama asserts machlokas kishihikir ba. The whole machlokas in the Mishnah is talking about where he was told. And then the only question is, what compare the mukas eitz to? Is she more comparable to a bogeris or is she more comparable to ba'ula? Let me explain this point just a little bit better. Bogeris. When a woman develops and matures and she turns into a bogeris, right? The three stages of a woman, we've gone over this many times. I don't think we've said this since the beginning of the Masechta, is that from 0 to 12, she's a Ketana. From 12 to 12 and a half, she's in the stage of what's called a Nara. And from 12 and a half upward, she's a Bogeris. Okay? A fully matured woman. There's a general assumption the Gemara makes is that a fully mature woman has Dam Besulim, but it's effaced. Okay? It's just simply not as much as when she was a Nara, when she was a Ketana. This girl who is a Mukadates, is she like a Bogeris? Meaning, a Bogeris hasn't lost her Dam Besulim, but it's somewhat effaced. So maybe the Mukadates is similar. That's what the Gemara is. That's one side of the argument. On the other hand, you could strike a difference. A Bogeris, nothing happened to her. She didn't experience anything with anybody. Amukadates, she had an accident. She physically lost her Dam Besulim. That's the issue. What to compare the Mukadates to? Avalohikirba. But let's say he was totally unaware, the husband. Divrahakovaloklom. So Rami Barchama says there's no debate. If he was totally unaware, so what kind of ksuva is she going to get? She's going to get nothing. What do we follow this under? Mekachtaos. In other words, she didn't disclose. She needs to disclose. V'rabbi Meir, amai medami lebogeres, nedami lebeula, beula isavet b'maisa b'dei adam. Halo isavet b'maisa b'dei adam. The Gemara, first of all, says, look, from Rabbi Meir's standpoint, I'd much rather compare to a bogeres because she's not a beula. She didn't have an action with another man. V'rabbanan, adam adami lebeula, nedami lebogeres. Bogeres lo isavet b'maisa klal. Hai isavet b'maisa. And as far as the Chachamim are concerned, the Chachamim will tell you no. The Mukadesh is much more comparable to a Ba'ula. Why? Because something happened to her. Masha'ekin, a Bulgaris, literally nothing happened to her. But if there was no recognition whatsoever, and she didn't disclose, and she didn't tell him, so therefore she's going to forfeit a ksuva altogether, filing it under what's called mekachtos. Okay, when we continue tomorrow, we're going to be discussing that maybe you can argue a point with Rami Barchama. Maybe it's not a mekachtos. We're going to explain that tomorrow. Okay, so again, just to recap, we went over the basic halacha today that a ksuva for a besul is 200, and an amana is 100. Amana, actually, in the word amana is the word mana, which means 100. And then we did the Mishnah today regarding conversion below the age of 3, prompted the discussion today, an important discussion today about children converting and sponsoring da'as of Beis Din. And then we finished up today with a machlokas regarding a mukadates, a woman who has not been penetrated by a man but had an accident, and is her ksuba going to get downgraded to a 100? So that's a machlokas, and we'll discuss more about this machlokas tomorrow.